chapter 6, verse number 8. And what we have covered so far, since this chapter deals with meditation, however, you will note that Lord Krishna just does not straight away introduce the practice of meditation, but instead he tells us we have to prepare the mind and then sit for meditation. And how do we prepare the mind? He advises a life of karma yoga. Therefore, one has to go through a life of karma yoga, which means right action plus right attitude. And if one goes through a life of karma yoga, what is the result of such a person? Krishna spoke about that in verse number 7. He gave us 4 stages in which we should go through before we qualify the mind to sit for meditation. And what is that 4 stages? First he said, Jitat Manaha. Jitat Manaha, Jit means victory, or one who has gained mastery over Atmanaha. Here Atmanaha means the body, mind, intellect, senses. Therefore, one through a life of karma yoga, one who has gained a mastery over his body, mind, intellect, equipment. And what is the state of that person's mind who has disciplined or mastered his body, mind, senses? Krishna says, prasantasya. Prasantasya means one attains a calm, peaceful, relaxed mind. There is no disturbance in the mind as you face the various situations in life. So the result of a karma yoga life is to attain a calm, peaceful, purified mind. Then he says, after that, one then experiences the stage of meditation. The mind is ready to sit down in meditation. And what is that state called? Paramatma Samahita. Paramatma means the Supreme Being, the Supreme Consciousness. Samahita means one who is established in this state of Supreme Consciousness. Because it is only the pure mind that can reach this state of Supreme Consciousness, which is not external, but it is internal. Paramatma Samahita. And thus, in this state of consciousness, then what is the, how does one handle the various experiences in life? Here Krishna says that Sito Usna Sukha Dukha Mana Apamana. 6 various types of experiences that we all may go through. Sita, cold. Usna, hot. At the physical level, we experience these kind of difficulties. Sometimes it is hot, sometimes it is extremely cold. Just like how we are able to overcome the situation, we are not disturbed by this change in the external environment that affects our physical body. In the same way, sukha dukha, which affects our mind, sukha is joy, dukha is sorrow, that afflicts our emotional mind, we are also well equipped to handle that. And mana apamana, honor and dishonor. At the intellectual level, we are also able to have the strength to withstand, because we face in life sometimes people praise us, sometimes people criticize us. Thus, whether the experience is at the physical level, mental level, or intellectual level, this realization of this consciousness gives us that sufficient strength to withstand any change in the external environment. And why is that? Because one is fully established in this consciousness, Satchit Ananda. The happiness, the security, the peace is coming from within. Therefore, one is not dependent on any changing external factors. So the peace is steady, the peace is real. And then in verse number 8, Krishna said that that process where one reaches this state of consciousness, we have to go through two stages, and that was mentioned as jnana and vijnana. Jnana is first when we attain the knowledge of our real self. Through listening, sravanam, through mananam, we listen, we reflect, and we understand and accept our real nature as this consciousness. That is jnana. Then one has to go to vijnana. Vijnana means that state of experience. In meditation, this state of vijnana also is compared to nididhyasanam, where we experience what we know. Jnanam stage we only know, but vijnanam stage we experience this Satchit Ananda bliss within. And when one goes through these two stages of jnanam and vijnanam, Krishna says there is an attitudinal change. What is the attitudinal change? We change our focus on I am this body with Atma. The attitudinal change is what? I am Atma with this temporary body. Once this attitudinal change happens, the greatest advantage is what? What is the greatest advantage? Once you come to accept I am Atma with this temporary body, what is the greatest advantage? The sense of limitation is gone, isn't it? There is no more identification with birth or death. There is no more identification with pain or sorrow, because you are the unlimited, non-changing, eternal consciousness. So all sense of limitation is totally eradicated, and I am totally free. So once one goes through this jnanam and vijnanam, therefore Krishna says there will be two qualities. Vijitendriya means one who has mastered himself, is a complete master of his body, mind, senses. And number two, one becomes a kutashta. If you remember, last week we discussed what is a kutashta. It's an anvil that the blacksmith keeps a piece of metal and he hammers the piece of metal on the anvil. And the piece of metal changes shape with every hammering, but the anvil remains the same. In the same way, the mind of a jnani is like an anvil, kutashta. Whatever experience that the jnani faces, it is not because of knowledge that the external environment will change, it will remain the same. What will change is the response to that experience. So the jnani's mind becomes like a kutashta, strong as an anvil, able to accept all the changes in life. And what is the relation of a jnani to the objects? Because let us remember, or not forget, that this jnani that Krishna is talking about is not a sannyasi who is retired to the ashram, but one who is living with all the possessions and with all the relations. So what is the relationship of this jnani in terms of objects that he has? And all the objects that we have in life can fall under three categories, here described as loshta, ashma, kanchana. Loshta is mud. There are objects in our life that have no value or really are not so important to us. If we lose them, we have them, we don't have them, does not make much difference in our life. So that is compared to loshta or mud. Then ashma is stone, which has some more higher value compared to mud, meaning those objects which we have some kind of attachment to them. And finally, the most expensive is kanchana or gold, meaning those objects which we treasure very deeply, which we want or which we are attached to very deeply. If they are lost or we cannot get them, it disturbs us. And what is the attitude of the jnani to all these three type of objects in life? Samaha, same. And why it is same? which we discussed last week, why the jnani has the attitude of samaha to whatever is precious, whatever is not precious, or whatever is mildly precious. How is this attitude of samaha cultivated? It is not that in terms of monetary value they are different. Gold is more expensive than let's say some other possession that you have. Maybe like a watch, your gold necklace would be more valuable than your watch, and your watch should be more valuable than your shoe. Maybe nowadays shoes are more expensive than watches. So different values that you have in your life, we know that in terms of monetary value they are different. So what is this attitude of samaha? How do you get detached? How do you develop this attitude of detachment? What is your attitude to the objects in your life?
What is like all the objects you offer it to God? Right. So it's like not yours.
Okay, fine.
So if you offer it to God and you have the mentality that I'm offering this to God, I'm doing work for Him, I'm the instrument
okay.
that He is, so okay. you won't get so attached to it.
Okay, and the other way is?
Sometimes we cannot really carry this all with us. We come naked, we go naked.
You see, we need all these objects in our life. We need, it's not that we are asked to do away with them. But a jnani understands that an object is not going to improve my status or my level of happiness or my sense of security. Because why? I've already discovered the state of anandam inside. So object is used for what it is worth. I don't give undue importance to object, one object over another object. Example like I gave you last week, you can have a knife to cut your vegetables. A knife is more valuable in terms of monetary value compared to a needle. But if you have a button to sew, what do you use? You need a needle. So a jnani understands every object in his life has some relevance, but he or she does not give undue importance to one object over the other. Because that object cannot add to my happiness, cannot add to my sense of security. I use it for what it is worth. So I do not get attached. My attitude is samaha to any object that I have in life. So that in verse number 8, Krishna spoke about the relationship of a jnani who is not psychologically dependent on any object. He is psychologically independent in relationship to objects. Now, in this verse of today, verse number 10, Krishna is now going to speak about a jnani's relationship to various people in life. And here he gives an example of 9 different types of people who we may have an opportunity to encounter in our life. We may or may not, but our relationships with various types of people can broadly be categorized in these 9 types of relationships. And who are they? And because we have, our problem is, why do relationships cause us problem? Attachment is one, but why do relationships cause us problem? Because of our expectations of other people, right? We have predetermined how we want everybody to behave. And when they don't behave in accordance to what we want, that causes our disturbance. So, the daily reactions that we have cause this, what we call raga dvesha, likes and dislikes. And what are the various type of relations? Here in verse number 9, sukhrit. The first word is sukhrin. Sukhrin means good people who are our well-wishers. In fact, they are well-wishers of everyone. They will help anybody without any condition. So there are people we encounter in our life, not necessarily they are our friends or relatives, but there are sometimes people who come forward to help us because it is in their nature. These people are called sukhrin. Then we have another category of people called Mitra. Suhrin Mitra. Mitra means also good people, but they will help you because of conditions. That means they know you because of friendship, because of relationship, they will help you. So there are people who help you because of a condition. Earlier was what? Suhrin, who help you whether they know you or they don't know you. They are just good people. Okay. Then we have Ari. Suhrin Mitra Ari. Ari is an enemy. You can't see the words in Sanskrit, but if you look at the Sanskrit text is broken down into words, right? So there are these words, if you look at the English, what you call Romanized version, they are all like jumbled out. Okay, so there is Suhrin, there is Mitra, there is Ari. Ari is an enemy who wishes you harm. An unknown enemy or a known enemy who wishes for your downfall, who wishes you harm. That is another type of person we will also experience in life. Then there is Udasina. Udasina is an indifferent person. He does not do good. He does not do harm. He is totally not bothered at all whatever happens. Like for example, they see an accident on the roadside, they are not bothered, they just go by. They don't want to get involved. Neither they will cause harm, neither they will cause any good also. So people who are indifferent. Another type of relation is Madhyastha. Second line, Madhyastha is when two people are having a problem. This person is interested in the well-being of both. So he plays a role of a mediator. He doesn't take...
He's like a third wheel.
Mediator. He does not take sides. Right? So he is a mediator who tries to bring two people together. He does not favor one side over the other. Then we have Dvesha. Dvesha is a type of person who has hateful characteristics. People whose conduct provokes hatred in other people. You know, you see this type of people, immediately you take a dislike to them. So those are those type of people, Dvesha. Dvesha. No, their conduct is very, how you say, maybe boisterous, egoistical people. They have bad conduct, bad manners. So when you meet this type of people, you take an instant dislike to them. Right? So they have bad habits, bad characteristics. Dvesha. Bandhu, then you have Bandhu, which means a relative, near or distant. So there are sometimes, because of marriage, because of certain relations, we became associated or become, we have new relatives, in-laws, etc. So Bandhu basically falls under all these categories. Then the last two is Sadhu. Sadhu is a noble person. Any noble person can be called a Sadhu who follows dharmic way of life, who follows a righteous life, we can call a Sadhu. Not necessary one who wears orange robes is called a Sadhu, but one who follows a life according to the scriptures is called a Sadhu. And one who lives a life of values, good moral values. Then the last one is Papeshu, completely opposite of a Sadhu, who follows a adharmic life, who breaks all the rules and regulations, who lives a life of no values at all. So these nine type of people, we may encounter some or all types of these descriptions given here. Again, what is the attitude of a jnani towards these nine different types of relationships? Whether the person is your relative, whether he is your well-wisher, whether he is your enemy, whether he has he is a person who has good values or has bad values. What is the attitude of a jnani to such a person? In the last line of verse number 9, Krishna says, Sama buddhir vishishyate. Sama buddhir, equanimity. Same attitude towards all these nine different types of people. And Is such a thing possible? Whether one is a criminal or whether one is a saint, how to look at them equally? How can we have this attitude of samatva or samabuddhya? It's not easy.
Very difficult,
right. So how should we cultivate this attitude? See, these are all internal reflections that we have to change our attitude, because we cannot change the external. And as long as we don't learn how to adapt to that external, our mind will constantly be in a sense of turbulence, isn't it? Sometimes you're happy you meet the right person, sometimes you're not happy, you meet the wrong person. So the attitude has got to be changed from within. So we have to understand then, how should we look at the world? With what attitude should we look at the world? How can we have this attitude of samabuddhi? How do we educate ourselves to look at various relationships we have in life that should not affect us? If we have the right attitude, then we are able to rationalize, put it into perspective, and thus these relationships don't disturb our mind. So, we look at it from a philosophical angle. If you look at the true nature of everyone, what is the true nature of everyone? Atma, Satchit Ananda. The true nature of the essence of every individual is one, that we know is Satchit Ananda. That God which is in me is the same God which is residing in you. And a Jnani understands this. But at the same time, there are, although the true nature of everyone is Satchit Ananda, is purity, yet there are people who behave differently, isn't it? There are nice people, there are bad people. There are decent people, there are indecent people. So therefore, what is the Jnani's attitude to this is that understanding nobility is the real nature of everyone. Purity is the real nature of everyone. But committing sins is the incidental impurities that cloud the saintly nature of every person. So hence there are two identities we have to look upon. Now, when we remove away all these impurities, what are we left with? The essence of every person is pure and saintly. Now, in order to understand this, Sankaracharya gives a beautiful example in Viveka Chodamani using the example of a sandalwood. The nature or the essence of sandalwood is that it gives out a fragrance, right? Beautiful fragrance. But when you take sandalwood and you leave it outdoor and it gets damp, what happens on the sandalwood grows some moss, right? And as this moss grows, it covers the sandalwood, and then the moss emits a very foul smell. Now, therefore, if I look upon the sandalwood and say it is foul smelling, whose mistake is this? It's my mistake. But if I take the trouble to scrape away the moss, I will enjoy the fragrance of the sandalwood. In the same way, if we look at the nature of every person, by nature, everybody is pure, everybody is saintly. But covering that saintly nature, everyone has got their faults, incidental faults. So how are we to look at all these various impurities like kama, krodha, moha, lobha? There are so many impurities. And one of the qualities of a true devotee of God, which Krishna gives 35 qualities of a devotee in chapter 12. One of the qualities he gives is Adveshta Sarva Bhutanam. One who has love for everyone does not discriminate between good or bad. And how do we look upon this? There are two entities, as I say. One is the person, the essence of the person. One is the action that the person is doing. Okay? You have the person. Essence of the person is purity. The action is impure. So to the person, what do you do? If you have two different entities, if you are able to distinguish in your mind, one, the person by nature is pure, is saintly. Number two, the action that that person is doing is impure. To the person, what do we do?
Labeling. Label as impure. Only that's what we do.
Right. So what is the right attitude to that person? Right, so to the person we give love, right? To the wrong behavior, if he cheats you, you ignore him. Cheats you again, you ignore him.
Take action accordingly. I mean, we do that with our children, isn't it?
Right.
If they do something wrong,
exactly.
We don't take it that they are bad.
Right.
We love them regardless.
Exactly.
So we punish them or we teach them about what they've done.
Correct. So to the person, we give love. To the behavior, we give the appropriate treatment. The person does not deserve hatred. Wrong action also does not deserve hatred. Person deserves love. Wrong action deserves appropriate treatment. And what is the appropriate treatment? What is the appropriate treatment? Okay. So here the scriptures also give us four different alternatives. What is the appropriate action? So one is called samaha. Samaha means where you are in a position to give an order, like a parent tells a child, stop, don't do that, that is wrong. That is called giving an order, right? Because you have that level of authority, so you use that level of authority and say, stop, don't do that. Second is called veda. Veda means where you sit down and you compare for that person, look, what you are doing, this, it is wrong. This is the right way, this is the wrong way, you should not be doing this, you should be doing that. So by advice, by cooperation, by explaining to the person, you try to correct that person. The third is called dhana, where you give some incentive. Just like a child, you say, today if you are a good boy, you don't break anything, I will buy you some chocolate. Bribery, sure. Call it incentive. So that's called dhanam, some form of incentive. And if you look at the Mahabharata war, this is exactly what happened. Although the Kauravas wrongfully took away the kingdom from the Pandavas and refused to give them back, yet Krishna never told them straight away go and fight. What he said, first go and discuss with them. Tell them what they are doing wrong. Advise them. Listen to them. Negotiate. And when everything fails, then what happens? The fourth one is danda, which means then you take out the stick. And you have to, if you have to use some form of force, then that force has to be used. But you should not use force until you've gone through samaha, vedaha, danaha. And that's why if you look at our gods, our various devas and devis, although they are a symbol of compassion and love and humility, yet in their hands, one hand they hold a lotus flower, another hand they hold a club, right? So if you're good, get the lotus flower. If you don't listen, and also we must remember, when punishment also is given, punishment also must never be backed by hatred. The punishment is a painful treatment, it is required, but it must not be backed by hatred also. Just like as sister explained how you would discipline your child, you may have to use a cane or a ruler, but with that punishment, the mother still has love in the heart. Right? So therefore, it is our duty to understand that the essence of everybody is pure, is Sachit Ananda. On that purity, there is an incidental impurity. To the person we give love, to that impurity we give the appropriate treatment. Therefore, the Jnani's vision is Samatvam. And also, this attitude of Samatvam can be cultivated when we also learn to overcome Raga Dvesha, attachment and hatred. When we learn to overcome attachment and hatred, because you must understand that attachment and hatred are forms of dependence. How? When I say I am attached to my watch, what does it mean?
You cannot live without your watch.
So I am dependent. I am dependent on the presence of my watch for my happiness. That's what we mean by attachment. So attachment is nothing but dependence on the presence of an object or person for my peace of mind, my happiness, my security. What is hatred? How do you define hatred? If attachment also is a form of dependence, hatred is also another form of dependence. Why? Because you need the absence of that object for your peace of mind, for your security, for your happiness. So when you say you hate someone, means what?
You don't want that person to be in front of you.
The absence of that person gives you ultimate happiness. So that means what? By that also you are dependent on that person's absence for your happiness. Right? So both hatred and attachment means what? Dependence. And thus, if you are able to overcome this attachment and the hatred, then also we can have a attitude of samaha towards all these kinds of various relationships that we face in life. So verse number 10 here, Krishna explains therefore how one should handle the various relationships in life. Now we come to verse number 10. Okay, up to the last verse, number 9, Krishna has concluded what we spoke about in our introduction. If you remember, Bahir Anga Sadhana. If you remember in the introduction, I spoke about Bahir Anga Sadhana. Bahir Anga Sadhana means these are general disciplines to be observed in our daily life. So here what Krishna is saying, if we observe these general disciplines, we will be able to prepare the mind for meditation. If a person follows this, then self-knowledge also is easy to absorb and meditation also is easy to practice. So this is disciplines that we have to practice in our daily life, which Krishna has spoke about from the previous verses. Now from verses 10 to 15, he will speak about Antar Anga Sadhana, A-N-T-A-H, which means specific disciplines to be observed before we sit for meditation. There are certain rules and regulations that we need to follow so that our meditation can be a success. And there are 8 points or rules that we must keep in mind before we sit for meditation. So the first, which he will cover in verses 10 to 15, but I'll just briefly run through them with you. The first point that Krishna will cover is called Desa. Desa means the place of meditation. And that place of meditation, Krishna will say, it must be a secluded place. secluded place means we should not wrongly understand that we should go into deep forest or cave and meditate. What does secluded place mean?
Quiet
place, to minimize all forms of distractions. Therefore, you should not be sitting in your living room or dining room to do meditation. Find a quiet place where there are minimum distractions. And Krishna says in meditation, one must be ekaki. He uses that word ekaki. Later we will see that word, which means that one must sit alone in meditation. Meditation is not to be practiced in groups. You may learn meditation in groups, but when you practice, it is not to be practiced as a group activity. And what is the reason again? Again, distraction. To minimize all forms of distraction. Also, he will say that the place must be physically and spiritually clean. Physically clean, we can understand that there will be no ants, insects, etc. So ensure that the place is physically clean. Spiritually clean means what? That place that you sit down in meditation should contribute or should be associated with some form of spirituality. So it is good if you can meditate in an ashram or a temple, or at least meditate at your altar. So have the right spiritual setting also, that will help in your meditation also, right? And also Shankara has commented on this, Adi Shankara, when he says that in order to make the place where you sit, where you sit in meditation, to make it spiritually better, he says you can create an artificially spiritual place by putting a picture of a saint or a deva or a symbol of Om, anything in front of you that contributes to a spiritually conducive nature. Okay. So one is the place. The second thing, factor in meditation is kala or time. Therefore, what is the best time for meditation? Morning, exactly. Early morning has been advised for meditation. And when we say morning, why is morning advised for meditation?
It's
quiet. Fresh, it's quiet. What else?
Morning is like when the energy is green, the sun is out, and the energy, the environment, the aura is so beautiful.
That's true. That is true. But here we must understand, when we talk about morning, it is because also that we should have had a sufficiently good sleep. So yesterday's problems should have faded off, and today's problems have not yet started. So it is better you don't read the newspapers when you get up in the morning. And when we talk about early morning meditation, we must remember they are talking about Satvik Kala, or what is known in the scriptures as Brahma Muhurt, which is 1 hour 30 minutes before sunrise. So if, example, in Malaysia sunrise is 6:30, 7, right, about 7, the ideal time for meditation will be 5:30 to 7, 1.5 hours before sunrise, right?
What if you go before? What if you wake up like 4 o'clock?
Fine, yeah. If you can wake up earlier, then you practice. But then you must have had a good sleep also. You have to sleep earlier the night before. So when you wake up, you should be refreshed also, right? So Satvik Kala, because it is neither tamasic, neither is it rajasic. It is not tamasic because you have had a good sleep, so the tamas part is gone. Mm-hmm. It is not rajasic because you have not started your day also. And that's why the sun plays a very big role in our state of mind. As the sun starts rising, you find that you generally become more active. You become more rajasic, isn't it? And in the evening when the sun sets, you become more lethargic, you become more tired. That is when the tamasic time steps in.
When are you sati?
In the morning, before the sunrise. And if you start the day correctly, then the sattvic nature will flow with you throughout the day. You see, example, if you get up in the morning and you start reading newspapers or what do you call it, violent books or materials or things like that, example, I'm saying, what happens? You carry that flavor with you throughout the day. But if you start in the morning with inspirational bhajans or with inspirational stories, you find that you carry that thought with you right from the for the whole day. So that's why that very morning what you do is very, very important. Right? Now, again, it is a very general rule. It is not compulsory. Basically, the most ideal time is when you are most relaxed. Right? When your mind is most relaxed and it is not sleepy. These are the two things basically. When your mind is not troubled and when you are not too sleepy. So you have to choose that ideal time, which is important, when the mind is not wandering too much, at the same time it is not feeling drowsy. Now supposing somebody says, my mind is never like that at any time. You see, you know, not wandering and not sleepy, but my mind is always like that. Then what do? Coffee. Starbucks. What do you do there?
Karma yoga.
Light exercise.
Right?
Light exercise.
Exercise. Like?
Simple stretching.
Oh, I see, like stretching.
You're saying it's calm all the time.
No, supposing the advice is you should not sit in meditation if your mind is troubled or if it is feeling sleepy. And if somebody says there's never a time like this in my whole day when I'm either not, my mind is not troubled or not feeling sleepy, then what time should I sit in meditation? Right? So the advice is then you choose a fixed time and by practice try to control your mind. So you choose a fixed time and try to bring your mind under control. If you don't have that ideal situation, then fix a time which is most ideal. And then do your best to meditate. Okay? And what about duration? How long is the ideal time to meditate?
For beginners, got beginners in the level one.
Generally, duration is not fixed. Why? Because quantity is not important. Quality is important. So if you are sitting in meditation for 3 hours, but for 2 hours and 45 minutes you are thinking about what's cooking, then that is not called meditation. So most important, generally in fact, most of the meditators suggest between 15 to 20 minutes. Right? Short meditation, but focused meditation. Right? So generally keep your meditation to about 10 to 20 minutes is quite sufficient. Okay. The third thing that Krishna will speak about is called asanam or seat of meditation. So when he says seat of meditation means what? When Krishna says asanam, seat of meditation means what? Huh? Means what? You should be sitting. Don't stand and meditate. And sit means not necessary on the floor. Be comfortable, because if you are not comfortable when you are sitting for meditation, your mind will be focused more on the comfort of the body rather than meditation. So sitting on a chair is not a problem, it is okay, be comfortable. Yeah, anyway, where the idea is that you must not feel uncomfortable, otherwise when you try to meditate, then you feel your body is uncomfortable, you are unable to meditate then. So be comfortable, fine. Most comfortable, those who can sit in that lotus position, sit. Those who want to sit on the chair, sit. Sit on the bed, sit. There is no hard and fast rule. Okay? And Krishna will speak about sitting on 3 layers, which we will discuss when we come to the verse. The 3 layers are kushagras, deer skin, and white cloth. Now, why the 3? We will come to that verse. Okay? Then also Krishna says, every meditator must have their own seat. Do not share. So have your own specific seat and do not share with others. Okay? It's very important because at the time of meditation, you do develop a lot of energies. So when you sit in the same place and not share with others, it helps in your meditation also. Okay? Fourth step is the posture of the body. How is the right position to sit in meditation? We will discuss that. Fifth is prana, prana samyam. The prana, the breathing must be even, it must be relaxed, because breathing and our thoughts are interconnected. Right? So we have to ensure that we have a relaxed and smooth breathing also. Okay? Sixth step is called Indriya Nigraha. Indriya Nigraha means mastery of the senses. Very important in meditation, as in meditation the senses can carry your mind away somewhere else. So the thing is, we have to practice some discipline on the senses. And if the eyes, especially he will concentrate on the eyes, because if the eyes are totally open, what happens?
You'll be looking everywhere.
Yeah, you'll be looking everywhere, right? You're distracted. And if your eyes are totally closed,
you will sleep off.
You will have a beautiful sleep. So therefore, what should you do?
You keep half, like three quarters, is it three quarters?
Half open. So you'll say, don't fully open the eyes, don't fully close the eyes, keep it half open, as though looking in the direction of your nose, at the tip of your nose. Okay, that is the advice that he gives. And the seventh thing that he will discuss about is called Mano Nigraha. Because even when our senses are under our control, the mind has got a lot of past experiences that can pull the mind away in different directions. So at least for the 10-15 minutes, you have to be very conscious of your mind. All whatever possessions you have, whatever relationships you have, you've got to mentally renounce them. At least for the 10-15 minutes. You have to become a mental sannyasi. Okay? Then the final eighth thing that Krishna will discuss is called Buddhi Nischaya, which means conviction regarding the necessity and utility of meditation. You must be convinced that meditation is relevant sadhana. And why meditation is important? Because it will help me to absorb the teachings that I have gone through. So the teachings remain only at the knowledge level. Now I have to experience, and for that meditation is very, very necessary. So if you don't have this conviction about the efficacy of meditation, when you sit in meditation, what do you feel? I'm only wasting my time. And all the time your mind will be thinking about all the important things that you have to do today. And thus you find that you are wasting your total time in meditation. So there must be conviction that meditation is very important sadhana to realize this self within. Right? So conviction, with this conviction you sit in meditation, withdraw the senses, withdraw the mind, and you are ready for meditation.
I have a question.
Yes.
You know, like when you meditate, so like when you look at your nose, what is going through your mind?
No, you are not supposed to look at the nose. Because if you try to look at the nose, you will find that, you know, it's not easy, right? So he's saying, as though in the direction, as if in the direction of your nose. Not look at the nose. Look as though in the direction of your nose. That means that much you close your eyelids, whereby your focus is in the direction of the nose. Not look at the nose. Okay? Right? As though in the direction of the nose.
But what are you focusing on?
What are you focusing on? Okay, that will come to what is the actual point when we sit in meditation. What are we supposed to focus on? And earlier, you remember, we discussed that our focus of meditation will depend on whether we are doing meditation before the study of the scriptures or after the study of the scriptures. If meditation is done before the study of the scriptures, it is called upasana, because you are meditating on a god or a Ishvara with form. So you meditate upon an Ishvara with form, that is before you attain the knowledge. Once you attain the knowledge that I am the self, then one should meditate and recall the words of the scriptures. So what you have known by knowledge, jnana, must become vijnana. So that knowledge must be now translated into experience. So once by the knowledge we understand that I am the consciousness in this body, the state of meditation is when we recall these words of the scriptures. Aham Nitya, I am eternal. Aham Sarvagata, I am all pervading. You are constantly repeating this in your mind, what you have learned, the knowledge. So there are two different types of meditation. Here Krishna is going to speak about that higher level of meditation, which is on recalling the words of the scriptures. That is called the meditation on the formless.
Okay.
Everyone
mentioned about oral, chanting.
Sorry? You see, this oral chanting again is at three levels. When the mind is not yet in your control, then the chanting, you advise to do it loudly. When you have got sufficient mastery of the mind, then you whisper. And when you've got total mastery of the mind, then the words are just chanted mentally. So it depends on the level of the meditator, right? Loudly whispering or mentally, mental chanting, right? Where you don't say anything, but mentally you're chanting. That is the highest level of chanting. And that is basically to bring the mind under your control. So now here we will go into the specific called Anta Anga Sadhanam, specific disciplines to be observed just before the practice of meditation. Okay, let's look at verse number 10. Verse number 10 here, Krishna says, Yogi Yujita Satatam. Yogi means the meditator. Yunjita means will concentrate, has to concentrate, meditate. When? Satatam. Satatam means what? Constantly. So he says this meditator should practice meditation constantly. What does he mean by that? Yogi Yunjita Satatam. Meditator should practice meditation constantly. Means what? It's not a part-time hobby. Don't take meditation as a part-time hobby. Just like exercise, do you do it on your birthday or your anniversary or Krishna Janmashtami? You do it regularly in order to get full benefit. Therefore, meditation has got to be done on a daily basis. You have to fix your time, fix your place, and ensure that you meditate on a daily basis. Yogi Yujita Satatam. So Satatam is regularly. And he says, where should one practice this meditation? Atmana. Engage your mind. Atmana means the mind. One should engage the mind in meditation. Where? Rahasi. Rahasi here means secluded place. Right? And then we should not mistake that secluded place means go away to a mountain, to a cave and meditate. When he says Rahasi Stita, Stita means staying in a secluded place, which means that which is not accessible to others, where you minimize all forms of disturbance. So make sure it is a quiet place, away from noise and people. Okay? And in this verse also he says, how many people should do meditation? Ekaki. See the word there? Ekaki, which means what?
No.
Do it alone. Meditation is not a group activity. And again, why alone? Because to minimize distraction from others also. Okay. Then he says, Yata Chitta Atma. What should be the condition of the mind and the body? Because this is basically what you are doing in meditation. Yata means control. Chitta, the mind. Atma here means body. Atma does not mean Sachit Ananda, the soul. So, Yata, Chitta, Atma. Chitta is mind. Atma is body. One should keep mind and body under control. Meaning, body should be made comfortable so it doesn't distract your meditation, and mind should be focused on what you are going to meditate on. And that's why if later on we'll be discussing about Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. This Patanjali's Yoga Sutras is a very important text written by Patanjali for people who are going, who are intending to practice meditation. And Patanjali gives 8 steps before you actually sit down for meditation. Is only the last 3 steps. The prior 5 steps have got nothing to do with meditation, but there are preparatory steps for meditation. Like, for example, he talks about Yama Niyama. Yama Niyama means values that you should inculcate in your life. That means ahimsa, non-violence, saucham, cleanliness, have healthy thoughts, use healthy words, right words, pure words, right? Then he talks about aparigraha, minimize your possessions. Now all this is to basically prepare your mind for you to sit down in meditation. Otherwise your mind is constantly focused on your possessions, on your relationships. The more possessions you have, the more your mind is preoccupied. The more relationships you have, the more your mind is preoccupied. So all that he talks about Yama, Niyama. Then he comes to Asana. Asana means the right posture for sitting in meditation. Then he comes to Pranayama, the right breathing techniques, because we just discussed breathing also has got a connection to your mind. Then only he comes to the actual topic about sitting in meditation, which is called Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi. The culmination is Samadhi. So same way also, here Krishna is also presenting to us stage by stage what we should do. The actual part about meditation will come later. Now these are all the preparatory stages. So he says, Yata Chitta Atma, you should bring, make your body comfortable and also keep your mind focused. Then he talks about another quality, Nirashi. Nirashi, Ashi means desires. And especially when you are sitting down in meditation, is a time when all these desires which are in your subconscious mind will come out during the time of meditation. So Nirashi means free from desires. And free from what type of desires? Not good desires. Here when he's talking about desires, he's talking about binding desires. Desires that trouble the mind, that disturb the mind, that create anxiety in the mind. How do we get rid of this anxiety, of all these desires in time of meditation? How do we get rid of all these desires? There's only one way, and that is for that time of meditation, as I said, that 10 to 20 minutes that you sit in meditation, you have to mentally learn to surrender those desires to God. Mentally learn to give up those desires. At least for the 10-15 minutes, you have to learn what is called saranagati or surrender. And again, this attitude has to be cultivated during our daily life. If we lead a life full of desires and all kinds of wants that we, or needs or desires that we have, then it is going to be very difficult when you sit down in meditation. Your mind is going to run to those desires. So that healthy attitude, that lifestyle also has to be cultivated. And at the point of meditation, saranagati, learn to surrender your desires to Lord. Another quality he gives here, aparigraha. Parigraha means possessions. Aparigraha means give up thoughts, not give up your possessions, give up thoughts of your possessions. And there is one text written by Adi Sankaracharya, it's called Yati Panchakam. Panchakam means 5 verses. Yati, Y-A-T-I, means one who is, has realized, one who is a realized person. So, one who is totally detached. And Shankara writes 5 verses about the life of this person. And in each of the verse, he has one line which is constantly repeated. And that line is, Kaupina Vantaha Kalu Bhagyavantaha. Bhagyavanta, Bhagya means a person who is, what you call, blessed. A blessed person is a Bhagyavantaha. So Shankara says, blessed is that person who is what? Kaupina Vantaha. Kaupina is the loincloth that a person wears. Kaupina. Now, he is saying in every line of the 5 verses, Kaupina Vantaha Kalu Bhagya Vantaha. Blessed are those who only have a loincloth. Meaning what?
Simple way of life.
Those who adopt a simple way of life. Not that you only should possess a loincloth. It's very symbolic to represent that you should live with minimum possessions as possible. Because living with minimum possessions, when you sit for meditation, your mind also is not distracted in so many different directions. Kaupina Vantaha. That's why we are always, you must have heard this line very often, simple living, high thinking. Why simple living is required for high thinking?
Because if you have so many possessions and so many things, you will be like focusing on that. You won't be thinking about getting yourself on the spirit. Your spiritual journey won't increase because you're too busy living this material.
Your mind is too much taken up with all the various material possessions. So simple living will lead to high thinking. Right? Otherwise, mind is always preoccupied. In fact, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will use this word, Yoga Shema. In chapter 2, he'll use this word, and later in chapter 9 also this word will come up, Yoga Shema. Yoga Shema means all the time, our mind is either in yoga or either in Shema. Meaning what? Yoga means either our mind is thinking about what we have, how to hold on to that, preservation, right? I have this money, how do I hold on to it? I am driving this Mercedes car, how do I hold on to it? You don't want to lose it, right? That is called yoga. Shema is what I don't have, right? So either, that is called acquisition. Your mind is either thinking about preservation, holding on to what I have, or acquisition, what I don't have. And
is acquisition better
than? Is acquisition better than preservation? Both cause disturbance, no? Preservation causes disturbance for the present. Acquisition causes disturbance for the future. So your mind is neither not happy now, neither is it not happy also about the future. Anxiety about the future. So both yoga, shema, Krishna says, surrender it to me. That attitude of surrender has to be there. Whatever I have, whatever I deserve will come in my life. Right? I will get what I deserve, not what I
want.
I will get what I deserve, not what I desire. Right? In life you will get what you deserve, not what you desire. So that is your
desire, deserve is because of your past.
Exactly, right. And your present effort. And your present effort. And whatever has come to you will come to you. Nobody can deny you that. Somebody is going to get rich, he's going to get rich. No matter how much you curse him, you'll get rich. Exactly, yeah. So, remember, you get what you deserve, not what you desire. So, this reduction of yoga means what I have, is called nirashir, your desires. Reduction of those desires is called yoga, surrendering that to the Lord. Reduction of shema, what I don't have, is called aparigraha. So both yoga and shema learn to surrender to the Lord. And understand that whatever you have, I am, they are with me, but they do not belong to me. I am a trustee. Whatever Lord has blessed me with, I am glad, I am thankful, but they do not belong to me. I use them for what? They have been given to me for what? Grow spiritually, and I should not be attached to them. Okay? So, that is the, instead of ownership, it is trusteeship. Understand that. Verse number 11. We have time? Yeah, we have time for verse number 11. Now he's talking about the place of sitting for meditation. He says suchau. Suchau means clean. The place must be clean. Dese means place. Pratishtapya means having established. Suchau, dese, pratishtapya, having established a clean place, another very important condition in regard to the place of meditation, not only should it be secluded, but it should be physically and spiritually clean. And as we said, physically clean means to ensure there are no insects, etc. around. Spiritually clean means to a place that should invoke spiritual thoughts in your mind. So either you choose a naturally sacred place, like the banks of a river or an ashram or a temple, or either you make the place artificially sacred by lighting a lamp, keep a picture of the devas, the mahatmas, your guru, whatever it is, to make the place spiritually, artificially sacred. Right? So cultivate that area around you. It must induce spiritual thoughts in your mind. And what should be the type of sitting place? Where should you sit on? So here he says, if you look at the fourth line of verse number 11, the place that you sit on should have three layers: Chaila, Ajina, Kusha, Uttaram. Uttaram means one layer upon the other. It is three different layers. And what are the three layers? The first layer is Kusha grass. Now don't get worried about this, because I will explain to you why he is saying all these things. Okay, it's very symbolic. So first of all, let us understand why Kusha grass is mentioned. Kusha grass looks like lalam, but it is not lalam. It is long and sharp. Okay, you can find it grown here also. And it has got a significance of spirituality, because it is mentioned in the Rig Vedas. It is used in sacred ceremonies. It is also the place of seating of priests and gods. And even in Buddhist texts also, this Kusha grass is mentioned, that that is a place where Lord Buddha sat on in meditation when he attained enlightenment. It is said that he was sitting on Kusha grass. And you will also know this Kusha grass is when the priest makes that ring for you to wear. That is Kusha grass. Okay? So whenever you do any ritual, ceremony, etc., he will make that ring out of Kusha grass for you to wear. Okay? Now, Kusha, again, because it is sharp, so it is supposed to suggest that your intellect must be sharp also. Right? It is very symbolic. Okay? And the story of Kusha grass goes back to the Puranas, Bhagavatam, when there was the churning of the mountain. Lord Vishnu took the form of the avatar called the turtle, Kurmo. Right? And on the turtle, the mountain was placed. And the mountain was churned by that Vasuki, the snake rope, by the devas on one side and asuras on one side. And as the churning of the mountain happened, the mountain was being churned on the back of the turtle, the hairs of the turtle dislodged and went to the shore. And that is what became Kusha grass. Okay? So the Kusha grass origin is from the back of the turtle, which is no other than Vishnu. And when later the Amritam was produced out of this churning, some of the drops of Amritam fell on this Kusha grass and thus made it sacred. So that is the what we call the story behind the Kusha grass. Okay? Now, on top of this Kusha grass, Krishna says, put a layer of Ajina. Not Ajinomoto, Ajina. Ajina means soft skin. I'll just finish this. Okay, soft skin. So soft skin like that of a tiger or deer. Now if you see the picture of Lord Shiva, when he's sitting in meditation, what is he sitting on? A deer or a tiger, I show. Okay. Why does he sit on a tiger or a deer? It is soft, but what is the symbolic reason of him sitting on a tiger or a deer? Right. So what does the deer or the tiger signify? Wandering nature of the animal. Like the animal has got a wandering nature, like the tiger or deer. It means one who sits on the skin of a tiger or deer means one who has mastered his mind, the wandering nature of the mind. So it's a very allegorical reference. Okay. So
nowadays
we can't see. Yeah, nowadays. So I'll come to that. So don't get worried now. So it represents the control. Don't go and look for tiger skin and all that. I'll explain to you. So tiger skin and deer skin also, there's another reason. If you look at the old ways that the saints used to go to the forest and sit on this, the tiger skin and deer skin also has got natural properties to repel insects. It has a natural tendency to repel. So that's why they used to sit on tiger skin and deer skin. Furthermore, this tiger skin or deer skin is not to be acquired by going and hunting and killing the animal. It is supposed to be retrieved from a dead animal. Okay? Now, on top of that tiger skin or deer skin, you place the third layer, which is chaila, which is a piece of cloth. Okay? Why? Because kusa grass is prickly. On top of that, you place the tiger skin. Tiger skin also is not comfortable, so you place a piece of cloth. And very important, Shankara says, you must remember the order. First kusha grass, then tiger skin, then cloth. Okay. Now, of course, the next question you ask me is, how to get all these things? And whether it is necessary to go and get all these things to sit down meditation. For that, you have to come back next week, or let you know. So, we'll end the session today. So, how do I make sure you people come back next week? Those who don't come next week must be hunting. Okay, we end by the prayer. Vasudeva Sudam Devam Kansa Chanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru Hari Om. I think Tila has got one announcement.